Okay. Good morning. So I'm very rapidly going to give you an overview. We're going to get a sense of what child-parent psychotherapy is, and then talk to you a little bit about the research, the evidence base for CPP, particularly with ethnically diverse and socially disadvantaged families. I'm going to be talking, weaving in ways that we incorporate a diversity-informed perspective as we do this work, and then at the end, just present a few policy implications. So very quickly, what is CPP? So CPP is a treatment, so child-parent psychotherapy, where we work dyadically. We work together with the child and their primary caregiver or caregivers. And typically, it's for children under the age of 6 who've experienced a traumatic event. It can also be done when children have attachment problems, mental health problems, or behavior problems. But we really like to think about whether the clinician has ruled out the possibility that trauma and traumatic experiences may be playing a role in what we're seeing. We have manuals, so I just put this in the slide deck because I knew you might want resources. But I wanted to start by just giving you sort of a quick scene that might help you grasp the treatment. So Darius, who's 23 months old and is African American, is toddling around, playing with a ball with his dad at the park. And all of a sudden, he looks scared and runs to his dad. Dante picks him up and looks around. "What's up, Dardar?" he asks. He sees a dog about a block away and says, "Oh, a dog. Bad dog," says Darius. "Oh, I don't know," says his dad. "He might be okay. Looks nice. Wanna see?" Darius hides his face, but then looks at the dog. Dante picks up Darius and starts to walk towards the dog. The young woman walking the small pug looks at Darius. "It's okay," she says. "He's nice. Just let him smell your hand." Dante starts to lean down. "No dog, no dog," shrieks Darius. "You scared, Dardar?" says his dad. "It's okay. Nice dog." "No, no," screams Darius. "Okay," says his dad. He stands up, putting distance between Darius and the dog. "A dog bit him when he was little," he says to the woman. "Oh," she says, "that's awful. I'm sorry." "Yeah," says Dante, "it was pretty scary, huh, Dardar? This is a little doggy. He won't hurt you. You're okay, baby. You're okay. Daddy's here." Darius snuggles into his dad's arms. He touches his arm and face where the dog bit him when he was 13 months old. "Bad dog," he says. "Yeah," says Dante, "that other dog hurt you. You got hurt real bad. I was so worried about you." He gently touches Darius's healed scars. "You're okay now, Dardar." Darius looks at his dog and touches his dad's face. "Dog," he says. They turn and look at the pug as he wiggles away. "There he goes, Dardar. Isn't he funny? Bye, doggy." Darius looks at the dog walk away. "Bye, doggy," he says. "Down," says Darius. He gets down from his dad's arms. "Ball?" he asks. Dante gently tosses the ball and they begin playing. And after a while, Darius asks, "Where'd the doggy go?" "Probably he went home," Dante says. "Oh," says Darius, and they continue playing. So as we think about this very simple scene, what I'd like to highlight is that there is no therapist here, and that what we have is a caregiver who is lovingly helping a child cope with a traumatic event that, you know, affected his development. And if we had more time, we would think and pause about all the wonderful things that this father does for his son, very simply. And these really, in many ways, are the keys to recovery, is that parents help their children to feel safe. They help them to regulate. How do you not only talk about safety, but even physiological regulation? He helps them to identify difficult feelings. He also helps him to have new experiences. And this is a story that grows as the child grows. It's not hidden. So we're able to speak openly about the fact that when he was 13 months old, he was savagely bitten by a dog as his parents were there because he just sort of had toddled off. Right? And what we saw there, really, this last paragraph at the end, is that after the incident, his parents noticed significant changes in his behavior. He was moody. He would fall apart crying for no reason. He would hit them. When they left the house, he was clingy, and he insisted on being carried, and he didn't enjoy running around like he used to. And that what we see is a small child who, right here, he was faced with a scary dog. And that for young children, they believe that their parents are all-powerful and can protect them from anything. And so when something bad has happened, it damages their view of their parents as protective, and that damages the way that they relate to the parents and the way that they explore the world. So that one of our ultimate goals is to rebuild that protective shield. Now, So the central idea of child parent psychotherapy is that when there has been a traumatic event, it is the parent who has the rightful place as the child's guide through life and also through trauma, and that our role is to support the parent so that they can support the child. Now, Darius and Dante are a case that we almost never see because it's a single incident trauma. But what we see in the simplicity of this event is how important it is to acknowledge the traumatic event, to give the child their story, that when he sees a dog, people don't say, you're crazy, that all of your danger signals are firing, it's because you were bitten. But in this particular case, it's safe. And the truth is that we see so many other families. So we might see Travis Bishop, and he's a 39-month-old Caucasian, Latino, and Native American boy who's referred by his DCFS worker. His maternal great-aunt Rosa, who's currently his foster mother, is concerned because he's extremely aggressive. He has extreme temper tantrums where he flails on the floor, swings his arms wildly, and hits himself on the face. He hits other children. He gorges himself on food. He steals food when his aunt tells him he can't have more. He has difficulty sleeping and frequent nightmares. He's hyperactive and doesn't listen to adults. He's reckless and often gets injured. He destroys toys. His aunt isn't sure whether she can keep him much longer, and she's really hoping that his mom can get it together because she's not sure that she can do it much longer. Now, what I'd like to point out here is, can you see how we're really focused on Travis's behaviors, on what's wrong with him? And a key buzz phrase that's going on in the field of trauma is really what happened to him. And nowhere in this referral is what happened to him, despite the fact that he's been referred by DCFS. Does that make sense? Whereas this really contrasts with Darius and Dante, where everybody's saying, this child has been bitten by a dog. And what we would learn from Travis is that he has been beaten, seen domestic violence, been repeatedly removed, but people will say he doesn't remember. So how is it that we think that the child who's bitten by a dog doesn't remember, but the child who has been injured by those most dear to him doesn't remember? Does that make sense? And in fact, many of us would believe that the dog remembers faster than we would believe that the child remembers. Now, as we continue working with many other families, we might see Susan, who's 25 months old. And again, I'm not going to read all of these, but what we're thinking about is, in Susan's case, she got in the middle of a domestic violence argument with her parents. And her family, you know, her mom is from Cambodia and her father's from China. And so they're very concerned. CPS is again involved. But, you know, one of the issues is that her father is actively denying that the violence happened. And so what will it be like to work with them? And also, as we think about this, he's having visits with his child. Will it be safe to bring it up? Because, you know, you have a caregiver who doesn't acknowledge who might be violent. And then what happens when we think about the mother actually wanting to go back to the father to be reunited? And, you know, and Susan is 25 months old, so how do we think about the way a 25-month-old processes? And even going back even younger to a 9-month-old who's had a serious head injury. Again, the layering of complexities in the different families that we see. In this case, her mother was a recent immigrant. We have numerous service sectors in, you know, sort of intersecting with a child with a serious head injury, such as the medical community, right? We have the medical community, we have the occupational therapists, we have the mother's need for work, we have her fear of utilizing services because she's an immigrant and she's undocumented. And so all of this layers onto the complexity. These are some of the puzzle pieces that we have to think about when we're working is, you know, how is the family safe currently? How does the child's age affect treatment? So the reason I'm highlighting this is that when we're thinking about models for working with families, the models have to really step up to the complexity of the family's lives and to really think about how do we not just try to give every family the same thing, but how do we operate off general principles? And one of the core principles, I think, in child-parent psychotherapy and in all good therapy really is that experience matters. And so as we're thinking about experience here, we believe that the caregiver's past experience really shapes their working model of relationships, their view of how people are with one another, and that that in turn affects the way that they might view their child, and that in turn affects what they pay attention to. And I'm going to give you a little bit of an example. And then because the caregiver is paying so much attention to certain child behaviors, the child starts to kind of internalize that belief and believe it about themselves, and that would affect the child's behavior. And that's sort of one of the pathways through which experience can affect behavior. And then, of course, the child in behaving a certain way, that becomes the parent's experience, which again feeds into their working models of their child, and you get this huge cycle. Does that make sense to you? And like, let's just think about TJ's mom, Lila, who's supposed to be getting it together. So within her past history, she was beaten and left by her father and by numerous boyfriends. And so she sort of formed this view, very naturally, that men hurt you and leave you. And so when she had TJ, even as a baby, even as a fetus when he's kicking her, she's thinking he'll hurt her. And she's also thinking, as he comes out, that he doesn't care about me, that I'm not important to me, that he might leave me. And so she's paying attention to those aggressive behaviors, and some of them are not aggressive, they're just simply what little kids do, where he throws a toy at her. And then she's noticing that he cries when she's around, but she's viewing it through the lens of her past. And she's thinking he doesn't, you know, I'm not important. And then TJ is hearing this, unfortunately, and he's starting to see himself as aggressive, as not listening, as not lovable. And, you know, this is a very sad cycle for everybody here. Now, one thing as we're thinking about experiences, we really need to think about trauma. Trauma in the parents' generation and in the child's generation. And on the right-hand side, what we have over here is these are the different behaviors TJ is doing. And you can look at him throughout his developmental progression, that at 6 months he's refusing to be comforted, he's hitting at 12 months, at 30 months he's hitting and kicking, and then this is the thing that's really going to bring him to our attention, is that in pre-K he starts choking another kid. But look at what he's been through. He's had domestic violence for the first 15 months, and when he was 13 months, his father choked him while he was in the backseat of the car. And so you see that, I call it connecting the dots, right, where we see how, we know that when you've experienced a traumatic event, oftentimes little kids, they replay what they've seen. And so we often see kids who are doing choking, not like seriously, but they're doing a lot of stuff around the neck when that's what they've seen. And so we need to be able to address that within the work. And then again, even moving back, when I say experience matters, it's the caregiver's experience that matters. And so I just want to move back here. So you think about this mother who's supposed to be getting it together. But interestingly, at age 9, her own mother died. And that set in motion this pathway where her father began drinking, he was in and out of her life, he became aggressive, and led to sort of her sort of both, unfortunately, because she wasn't well supervised, getting molested and getting involved in violent relationships. And as we say experience matters, let's go back to historical trauma. Because her father was half Native American. I mean, actually, her father was full Native American. And as we think about it, he was actually placed in a Native American boarding school. And within that school, he was separated from his parents. All the children were taken. And within many of the schools, they were beaten, they were molested, they were beaten when they spoke their own language and upheld their native traditions. And so what I'm trying to highlight is that trauma has its roots in intergenerational trauma and in historical trauma. And our models need to not just look at what's wrong in the here and now, but to understand the larger context that shaped them. So as we do this work, I put in the slide deck because I couldn't possibly cover it all. We have 5 randomized trials that support the evidence of child-parent psychotherapy. And 4 of them were done with a majority of families who were ethnically diverse as well as socioeconomically disadvantaged. And so we have 1 done entirely with Latino immigrant mothers, 2 done with predominantly African-American parents, and the one that I'm going to focus on is the one that was done with our team, which was really focused on preschoolers, average age of 3 to 5 year olds, who had all experienced domestic violence, but had also experienced numerous other traumas. And what you can see is that, you know, this is only 12% of our sample was white, 38% mixed, 28% Latino, 16% African American. And we randomly assigned them to our treatment model versus what they were getting in the community. All right, and what I'd like to show you is that when you look at the orange line, that is the community treatment, and the green line is CPP. And if you notice how the CPP group is showing a greater decrease in the number of traumatic stress symptoms, as well as, interestingly, we help with maternal avoidance, maternal PTSD symptoms, and later on with maternal global symptoms as we look at the follow-ups. And again, also with children's behavior problems, you're seeing that similar slope in lines with CPP being better than what's out there in the community, and those results holding up till follow-up. And for those of you who've heard about the adverse childhood experiences, we really wanted to think about children who experienced more than four ACEs, and was our treatment effective for them? And so when you're looking at this, you can see that this is the group here that had experienced more than four ACEs that received CPP, and this is the group here that had received community treatment with more than four ACEs. You see how we have a nice treatment effect there. And similarly here, this is the community group. This is diagnosis of traumatic stress disorder, and this is the CPP group going from 67% to zero, which is a bit odd, but still in terms of traumatic stress symptoms. So as we think about this work, we're talking about child-parent psychotherapy. What I'd like to highlight, though, is that when we're doing this work, I'm asking you to come in to talk about trauma. And this is really a very difficult bridge. And in general, when we're thinking about engagement, most families are not crossing that bridge. They're not coming over to see us. And that we know that engagement is related to ethnicity, socioeconomic status, and environmental context. So our models have to take that into account. And that as we think about some of these questions, can I trust you? Will you help me? Do you see me? Will you understand me? I want to really think about how a family's cultural group experiences, including historical trauma where one group may have harmed another group, may be affecting this process. And one way that I think about this is as a stoplight. So when I'm working with a family, do they see me as green, all systems go, yellow, proceed with caution, or red, that I might actually be dangerous given the history of our people or the history of the families work with systems. And so this is critical to keep in mind. And even if any of us were to pick a therapist, I'd like to point out that we might have biases towards one person or another, where we might sort of say, yes, this person I feel very comfortable with, whereas this person I don't. Now, why this is very important from a policy perspective is that we're being asked to very quickly engage and intervene with families, not thinking about how do you form a relationship where people feel safe. And here I am asking you all these questions. And so what if you don't engage rapidly, but your child really needs these services, but you don't engage rapidly because you have a history that makes it so that it was unsafe for your people to engage with services? Okay. And so just as we continue thinking about diversity, I also want to think about, we have a particular view. Each of us has a theory. And so if you were to draw a simple Venn diagram where this is my view, this is the family's view, and this might be the view of another person, one of the questions is, as we're looking at a particular problem, would we be in overlap in terms of our responses to the questions? What are the strengths? Is there a problem? Why is there a problem, and what should we do? And what I'd like to think about is, here are all the possible reasons for why a kid might be having difficulty. They might be hungry, they might have language problems, the parent might be depressed, there might be a parenting problem, but what if it's also that there's been a lot of domestic violence and fighting? And so this kid has the world of icky inside, because it's really hard when the people you love are fighting. And here's a family, and if you think about that diagram back here, just think about all of the people who might be having different theories. The school, pediatricians. And so one of the big questions is, when we're working with a family, is it possible that we're bestowing different theories on them? All right. And so we really need to think about this idea that when we are in overlap in our theories, we tend to be happy. But there are many other diagrams in terms of the overlap in our perspectives. And sometimes when we don't overlap, and we have to put in place a program, the question really is, who wins? And a lot of families are telling us that the services, which we're paying a lot of money for, are not matching their belief about what might be helpful to them. So this is a place where we need a lot more dialogue. Now to end up, we really believe that one of the ways that children heal is by being able to talk about and process their trauma. And I call it putting it in a suitcase, because your caregiver helps you carry that. You never get to fully ditch your history. But when you carry your history versus it ruling you, you are stronger. And this idea that ACEs or adverse childhood, they don't define you. In fact, if you look at it, most of the art, literature, and music and social change has been developed by people with four or more ACEs. And so as we think about that, though, we really want people to acknowledge that a child and caregiver have experienced trauma, to be able to think about how functioning is related to trauma, to be able to provide safety. But most people will tell us that we don't talk about trauma, certainly not in our family. So it is critical to be able to have the time where we can both hear them and then present some of what we know about why this might be important. And so as we think about, and just to wrap up, this really leads us to start thinking about policy implications. We need billing practices that allow for an extended engagement, especially with caregivers that don't trust the system. We need policies where we're asking you to talk about things that would lead to me reporting you. We need policies that when a caregiver really wants to come for healing, how do we create a safe space where they don't have to be so afraid of removal so that they feel gagged? We need to be able to, to link adult and child services, and we need to be able to incorporate services into child-serving systems that address the intergenerational impact and that also address historical trauma. And so these are just some of the things, and I hope that this starts a dialogue for thinking about what we do. NCTSN.org has a lot of resources, and we have a lot of resources on our Child Parent Psychotherapy Facebook page. Thank you.